The premier event for infection prevention and control is coming to San Antonio this June. APIC annual conference brings you the latest research, innovative products, and practical knowledge to help you prevent infection. From inspiring keynotes to thought-provoking panel discussions, APIC 24 curates an extraordinary platform for knowledge exchange. Meet IPs from around the world who face the same daily challenges as you. If you work in infection prevention and control, you don't want to miss this event. Learn more and register to join us in person or virtually at annual.apic.org.
You're listening to the 5-Second Rule, brought to you by APIC, the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. Together with our nearly 16,000 members, we strive to create a safer world through the prevention of infection. Join us while we talk to infection preventionists and other experts to learn the truth about some common myths related to the risk of infection and to get tips to keep yourself and the people around you safe from infection.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Marie Wilson. I use she, her pronouns, and I am joining you one last time today as guest host of the podcast with my colleague, Jay Liggins. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Marie. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. We had our accreditation survey last week, so I am feeling a little bit lighter. Excited to have some new action items to be working on. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I was wondering how that Joint Commission survey was going for you. I know you had some visitors last week, couldn't attend our Communications Committee meeting, but everybody was thinking about you. So glad to see you came out on the other side a little lighter.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. I felt all of the good vibes. I appreciate it. You know, like a lot of organizations, we've been waiting for them for quite a while, so it's just nice to have it behind us and getting to look forward. But what's new with you? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Pretty excited about today's discussion. Again, my name is Jay Liggins, and yes, Marie said it, we are here for the last time as guest hosts for the 5-Second Rule podcast.
Bittersweet. It is bittersweet. We're still going to stay engaged, right, as Communication Committee members.
Oh, absolutely.
Getting to work
I'll
with
get
our
to
new
listen
hosts.
To the podcast again.
Yeah. It won't be weird hearing our voices. And a little teaser for anyone listening today, we have a special treat at the end of today's episode related to our new hosts. So please stay through. But we think you're going to really enjoy the conversation.
Yes.
We're joined today by someone who's tackling recruiting, retaining, and training new infection preventionists with great success. So Kelly Konopic is the manager of infection prevention at Good Samaritan Medical Center, SCL Health, now Intermountain, in Lafayette, Colorado. She's been an infection preventionist since 2014 and has a background in nursing, working in mental health, medical surgical nursing, orthopedic and wound care. Welcome to our show, Kelly.
Hi, thank you for having me on. It's great to be here. Like you said, my name is Kelly Konopic. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm excited to chat with you guys today.
We're really excited to have you. Yeah. So I would like to just add a little bit, wasn't included in your bio, is that Kelly is actually, if the name sounds familiar or the topic, one of the 2022 Heroes of Infection Prevention in Leadership category. Congratulations, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So go ahead and tell us a little bit. Well, I'll tee you up just a little bit more. I kind of teased it's going to be about recruiting, retaining, and training new infection preventionists. And this is really, you know, on topic with what we've been talking about since the Communications Committee is engaged with the podcast. You know, we talked about how to train people using the NHSN and APIC case studies for our NHSN surveillance. We talked about the novice roadmap, and now here we are talking really maybe more to our manager and director side of the conversation and how to actually be successful in engaging new infection preventionists and keeping them engaged through the profession. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the project that ended up earning you this award?
Yeah, so this actually predates COVID. So we've known that this shortage of infection preventionists was going to be coming down the pipe for a while. And so selfishly, I looked into this project because I was pregnant and I wanted to cover maternity leave. So I'm sure plenty of people can relate to that, but it was a very selfish sort of start to this. And so at that time, I was looking at a way to get some novice infection preventionists in. And we were really trying to pull people that we already had coming from some non-traditional backgrounds and utilizing that APIC roadmap to get people trained to help fill some of these gaps. So initially, we cast the net wide. We pulled a lot of people in. We did some interviews. And then I put together a program following that roadmap where it was one day a week for these individuals. And then they would work with infection prevention while they were doing on that one day of week. And then they would do some homework. They would do some additional learning outside of work with the hope that they would plug and fill those gaps. My program did, I won't say crash and burn, but did not end the way that I wanted it to when none of our IPs filled any sort of openings at the time. Unfortunately, to tie into the pregnancy thing, the person I brought in ended up becoming pregnant and not being able to cover my own maternity leave because she was on her maternity leave. So it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. But she did during the pandemic come and fill one of our open infection prevention positions at one of our other hospitals. So during the pandemic, we needed to fill a lot of positions. We brought in 8 people and we were able to use this roadmap that I had put together, the APIC roadmap plus our own kind of how to implement it to get all 8 of these IPs up and running at a time when it was absolutely nuts for infection preventionists. So training and balancing, you know, masking guidelines, PPE requirements, all of that sort of thing.
Holy cow. 8 IPs up and running all at the same time. That is quite a achievement. You know, if you're, it's always tough for me to just train one person and find time and time manage that. But to do 8 all at the same time, you know, in order to make that happen, what kind of metrics do you use to observe to see if that training tool is being successful?
Yeah, and I will say all 8 of them were not my own direct reports. So I am part of a system. I had one direct report to me and then was helping facilitate the program at some of our other sites. So I did get to share that load. And luckily did not have to do all 8 myself, which was great. But looking at those metrics as we're pulling these new infection preventionists on board, it's a lot of soft metrics when we look at this. So there are things like, do you know your NHSN definitions? Do you know what a CAUTI is, a CLABSI, that sort of thing. But it's really looking at how is your new infection preventionist working in your organization? Are they starting to build relationships? Do they feel comfortable reaching out for those resources? And I like to use a one-on-one, a very formal scheduled one-on-one with some loose open-ended questions to see how things are going, to make sure that your IP is feeling supported all the way through, every step of the way. Because, you know, in a non-pandemic time, it's a lot to learn as a new infection preventionist. And it's a lot that you don't learn in school. But during a pandemic, it's even harder. And so to really dedicate that time to talk to your new infection preventionist, make sure they feel supported, make sure they're making those relationships, and then see it in action. You know, again, I said this is a lot of soft sort of things, but is your infection preventionist going and getting lunch with other people outside of your department? Are they talking to the charge nurse down in the ICU? Do they know some fun facts about people throughout the hospital? Those are ways to see that they're really starting to ingrain in the hospital and making their presence known beyond just that, hey, wash your hands sort of presence.
I mean, that presence is also very important still. And one that we are notorious for, I'm sure every IP can agree. We've been called the hand hygiene police at some point in our career. But, you know, I'm really glad you brought up that, you know, relationship terminology. You know, I think a few of our episodes we've done you know, over the past couple of months, something that's been constant in every single one of them is building relationships. And I think some of those soft metrics you just mentioned on how to realize if your IPs that are starting out are building relationships are very key.
Yeah, I love that point. You know, I'm sitting here thinking about at my last institution, we would dedicate a lunch hour, a genuine lunch hour. We would all come to the table and we would all eat together. It was very rare that we would not honor that time where we would come and we would share what we're hearing from around the facility. And it felt almost a little bit gossipy. You know, it was never negative or anything. It was just informational. And now I see the value, really. You've helped me understand that value, which is, oh, this person is getting out and going over there. You know, our director who is behind a closed door in a lot of meetings for a lot of the day, you know, that's their way of checking in and going, okay, my team is getting out there. They are meeting people. They're making connections. They've got a pulse on what's going on. And that is so incredibly important. Really, really interesting, Kelly. If you don't mind, I'd like to back up just a little bit because I feel a lot of our experience informs how we lead ultimately. And so I'd like to know a little bit more about your background. How did you get recruited into infection prevention? And do you think that anything from that experience influenced you for this project?
I started in nursing, and I knew from nursing school, actually, that I wanted to get somewhere in the public health field. I knew that right away. I think from day one, I did my capstone in public health. I did some travel stuff, and I thought it was really fun. I liked looking at infectious diseases on large scales. I liked to see this population-based thing. So that really got me into it. But as I started looking into infection prevention as a career path from nursing, I had no idea how to get into it. I ended up getting my master's in epidemiology, and then I just started applying to infection prevention jobs. And with an RN background and an MPH, I wasn't getting interviews. I wasn't able to even put myself out there to say, hey, I could be a really good IP. And so if I, with everything that's right and checks the box on paper, couldn't get in front of an interview team, how is anyone who doesn't have that going to get into in front of a team? How is anyone from an alternative background going to get into that sort of field? So luckily for me, someone took a chance on me. There was a very desperate LTAC, and they agreed that that's a long-term acute care hospital, and they agreed to bring me on, and I really hit the ground running, and there was so much to learn, and it was so exciting. And I wanted to give other people that path to get in. Sometimes all it is just an internship or just something on a resume that says, hey, I know a little bit about infection prevention. See me here. Let me join. And I know how important it is to pull in people from other backgrounds. I have that very traditional nursing MPH background, but I don't know everything. And I need to be working with people who have different backgrounds than mine, because I like my partner right now, she has a lab background. And anytime that I have some weird organism, I end up calling her, knocking on the wall behind me here and saying, Emma, help me. I need to know what this bug is. Where does it come from? And so it's really important to pull in those different backgrounds. And so knowing how hard it was for me to get in and knowing that it's really important to pull people in, that's where I wanted to sort of set up this program for success. That's where we started this initial program of casting the net wide. My initial trainee had an exercise physiology background. So absolutely not what you would expect from an infection preventionist, but she was really interested in it. And she's been a great IP since going through that program. I have all confidence in everything in her infection prevention wise. So that was kind of the background for this program and trying to pull people into it.
But, you know, the diversity within our profession is what I think is one of the things that makes us so valuable as team members in the healthcare setting and really beyond, right? As infection preventionists move beyond healthcare more and more since the pandemic. So I love to hear that. I also love to hear that there are these organizations out there that are opening the doors for people, welcoming them in. And so I just really applaud you, Kelly, for doing that and having the excitement to do it, having success in doing it. And I hope it encourages other people who are listening today.
I hope so too, because when we're looking, we're never really looking during a comfortable time during the year, right? For to fill in IP positions, it's always crazy, stressful, jam-packed schedules, and to be able to have some kind of pathway that will help even a novice that comes on, just like me when I started, you know, had no experience. Because that's one thing that I think is unique about our profession is a lot of it is learned when you're doing the profession. You just need to get that first step in the door. Seems like it was a question of when you were going to get this award, not if. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I will say the people who nominated me for the award are two people who I actually trained through this program. So it feels pretty good to be nominated by the people who, you know, I helped bring them in, but then they made it all possible and took it and ran with it.
Oh, that's really incredible. That just gave me a whole bunch of warm fuzzies. Like,
don't mind me. I'm crying over here. It's okay. It's okay. My eyes aren't watering.
Hey, I will say, you know, unfortunately, we are recording this podcast on November 17th. And so currently the awards are still open, but everyone will be listening to this in December. So even if you didn't submit an award nomination for a colleague or a leader or something, I hope listening to this podcast, not being too far removed from that possibility for 2023, people are encouraged to think, what can I submit for 2024 for my team or for my colleagues? Because just to hear me and Jay's reactions to what your team did for you, Kelly, I mean, just that's a lot of joy. And I think that everyone deserves, even just the nomination in that case makes it so much more special. Icing on the cake that you won, not surprising. So what are you hoping, kind of, as we are, you know, as Jay mentioned, most of the time when you're trying to recruit new people to your department, it's because you're maybe mourning the loss of someone that's moving on, whether it's for a good thing, you know, their advancement, or a bad thing, you know, unexpected move, whoever. There's still kind of this, oh, bummer, you know, there's a disruption. And then you've got to get past it. You've got to get your team members. We're moving past the craziness of the pandemic. Hopefully nothing is coming around the corner, though we see a report of Ohio measles outbreak. Okay, I'm not ready for that yet. But what are you hoping as things kind of settle within the world around us? Hopefully you don't have any openings. What are you hoping is next in using this approach? What are you excited about as the next phase?
Yeah, I kind of see this as twofold. So you have your schools we have these schools now that are having these programs for infection preventionists. So that's really new and really exciting. And those people need experience with infection prevention. They need experience in the hospital. So being able to partner with those schools, I know our system, we've tried to pull some master's students in for projects and things like this. One of the infection preventionists that we hired during the pandemic is actually pretty motivated about this as well. And she's looking at maybe even high schools and trying to get people excited about the field at that level even. So, you know, I'm sharing the excitement and trying to get more people to pull more people into this field because we know it's a need. So there's that piece of it, that school pulling people in, giving these sort of outside opportunities, these shadowing opportunities, things like that. There's also, I think, this piece of internal. So you have all these people who are working in healthcare, and some people are really happy to stay in their job, you know, from graduating school all the way to retirement. They think that's the best thing ever. But a lot of people are looking to move up or they're looking to change. We know healthcare is really dynamic. And so using this model to give people an opportunity to try something new, whether it looked like that internship that I did several years ago where it's one day a week, or really just taking some of these principles and getting people involved in different committees. So having a bedside nurse be your CLABSI champion and teaching them how to round, teaching them how to engage with staff, how to talk to staff about CLABSI prevention, how to navigate different pieces of the healthcare setting. And so if you can get people excited on that end, then you can also pull internally into some of these positions. And whether that be, you know, they get really excited about infection prevention and want to become an infection preventionist, or, you know, maybe they're really excited about the education piece of it and they want to go education, but now they have this strong infection prevention background and you have a great ally. in the education department. So there's a few ways that I'm really excited about pulling this out and spreading the field of infection prevention, both with getting more infection preventionists, but building those relationships into some of the outside non-infection prevention, but infection prevention related departments.
You know, I love to hear it, like, because a lot of us will engage with or try to engage the liaisons, whatever we end up calling them, these links from our department out to where the patient care is happening, and looking at it from the perspective of potentially a future pool to recruit from is also really exciting, because they're a step ahead already, right? They're aware of the institutional policies and procedures. They might even have some really valuable feedback that they haven't been able to express before about how to maybe scale up and spread some initiatives and instance and, you know, units where it is successful versus where it needs improvement. So that I love to hear that. One of those, it ties back very nicely to the competency model with socio-adaptive strategies using those link liaisons. Excellent work. No
great
surprise
plug.
There. well, Jay, did you have a question? Sorry,
I did. Kelly, I was kind of, you know, as we're talking about recruiting and training new IPs, you know, how, and then there's another thing that's going on in the healthcare community right now is retaining staff. You know, IPs are not, you know, special compared to the rest of the healthcare world right now. We're losing them also as fast as we can get them in sometimes. So what is your advice to leaders and managers to retain the IPs that we're recruiting and training now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, we see it in all of healthcare right now. Everyone's kind of making that move and just changing careers in healthcare, getting out of healthcare. And it all comes down to support. You have to support the people around you. You have to support new people, especially as they're coming in. So it ties back to some of that relationship. So making sure that people are getting out, able to make those relationships. Asking your new people, what are your future career goals? How can I help you meet those goals? Asking them, how are you feeling today about this? What challenges have you run into in the last week? How can I give you the support to go through those challenges? Do you want me to come sit in on this meeting? It's a tough meeting. Do you want me to come sit in and just be a presence to help support you? Do you want me to help guide the conversation in this meeting? Or do you want me to really take the lead on this? And I like to give my infection preventionists, the chance to really lead. And so I will be there as a support. I will sit in the back and I will build up this infection preventionist to give them the confidence to tackle something like that. And then just really interject whenever I need to be. But I think taking that step back and being that kind of background presence gives people the confidence that they need to move forward. And so really giving them that confidence, knowing where they want to go and supporting them where they want to go, I think are two huge things. And then obviously burnout's a huge issue with infection prevention right now. And so making sure that your employees are having a good work-life balance. I know that's something that I have really focused on in the last year. Spoiler alert, my work-life balance was pretty terrible during COVID.
Relatable.
Right? Weird. So now I don't take 1 a.m. calls unless it's an Ebola patient. But making sure that your employees have that work-life balance. Sorry, what was that, Jay?
Sorry. No, I'm saying you got to go knock on wood now because that was the forbidden word.
I know, right?
You're not allowed to say that.
But making sure your employees have that work-life balance too, making sure that they can go home and disconnect, because you don't want to have somebody burn out in the first 3 months of infection prevention because they're now taking the 1 a.m. calls you don't want to take. You know, making sure that we've got those hard boundaries in place so that you can give your all at work, but then you can also give your all at home.
Absolutely.
I love
boundaries,
that.
Relationships, no 1 a.m. calls.
Like,
I'm gonna put it on a post-it.
I don't
live, laugh, love.
I love that, Jay. I don't know how you feel, but I'm like, Kelly, do you have any openings? No, just kidding. I love where I work. But this, I mean, talk about recruitment. This is great. I'm like, I would work for Kelly in a heartbeat.
And then there's the retention piece.
Yeah. So speaking of retention, kind of getting back to metrics, you know, do you have any metrics for you as a leader related to retention of your team? Or is there anything that you're feeling out there as you've built up your team? Or talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, my team is pretty small. So I don't have any like hard and fast metrics. I would say as long as my team is happy and they feel like they are working towards something, and you know, 80% of the time they don't dread coming into work, I feel like I'm doing a really good job. And so I try to make sure that we're touching base, that we're checking in, that my team's feeling off to say, hey, how can I help you? What's up? What can we do about this? And so I don't have any really strong metrics around that. It's more just about the feeling with everything. How is everyone feeling supported? How are we working through this together? And making sure that, you know, we're all on the same page with things.
You know, like I was mentioning earlier, there is always going to be circumstances that come up, right? Career advancement, change in location, these sorts of things. So we can't retain 100%. I don't think that'd be realistic, but I love what you've spoken to there. As long as they don't mind coming to work 80% of the time, everyone's got a day now and then where they're like, I'm kind of here.
Yeah, there's going to be days that you don't want to go in. It's just going to happen. And if an employee leaves because they're furthering their career or they're moving into something that they love more, then I'm happy for them. Then I've done my part to help them get to where they want to be, because I'm really here to like make my team go and run the infection prevention department, but really to make the people around me achieve their own goals. And their goal might be to come replace me someday, or their goal might be something entirely different. And I want to help them get there wherever it might be.
Do you have any last bits about your project or your passion, I should say, that you'd like to share with our audience today?
You know, I think it's just really important to be pulling in new people to infection prevention and seeing where we can pull anybody in. Don't discount anyone who doesn't have that traditional background. You're going to find an awesome infection preventionist anywhere. And we all know the personality that works really well for infection prevention. It's someone who's willing to learn. It's someone who is excited about weird germs and can pronounce strange infections. But it's someone who's willing to pivot and someone who's excited and someone who knows that they will never know everything, but they know how to figure it out. And so it doesn't matter where that person came from or what their background is. If they have those qualities and they are inquisitive, they're going to be an awesome infection preventionist.
Oh, I love the party trick of being able to say like Enterobacteriaceae cloacae, you know, spelling it different story.
Spelling is off the table. They don't have to spell. It's okay. Yeah.
Just pronounce.
You know, I'd like to add on to that. I had a thought while you were speaking for our managers, directors, people that have the ability to remove attestations or hard stops from job applications related to having a certain license or a certain degree for an infection preventionist position, just to get them to the resume, the application, getting into the hands of the hiring manager. I think that's one thing that I would advocate to, as well as I've tried to encourage people to try infection prevention. They'll be like, oh, there's a hard stop on being an RN. And I'm like, push past it. I don't know how, but push past it. And so if we can break down those barriers too, it's a way for us to open up the doors, at least so that we can further evaluate with our expertise.
Absolutely.
Well, before you go, Kelly, we're going to ask you the same two questions we ask every infection preventionist on the podcast. I'll go first. What's something you've learned about yourself as an infection preventionist that you didn't know 3 years ago?
Well, 3 years ago was pre-COVID. And so something that I've learned in that time is really the power of infection prevention friendships. and being able to really rely on the people around you. So I'm going to give a shout out to the other managers in our system that I have been with for the last few years through the pandemic. And I have learned how much I need them and how much we need each other, both to bounce ideas off of related to infection prevention, but also to say, you will not believe what kind of crappy day I had. Please listen to me. And I think that's really important for everyone in infection prevention. And I know it's sometimes hard when you're in maybe a solo facility or a rural facility, but you know, reaching out and knowing that has been huge for me in infection prevention and keeping my sanity.
For me, I like to just create memes and send them to my other fellow IPs. So Kelly, our next question is, what are you looking forward to for the future of infection prevention?
I'm really excited to see where infection prevention grows, you know, both in the hospital, but outside the hospital. So by recruiting all these new infection preventionists, we're now going to have a ton of IPs that can help everybody. And I'm really excited to see outside of the hospital where we can help with this, whether it be, you know, helping daycares make respiratory illness plans or, you know, sort of community outreach things, non-traditional settings. And I think that's really exciting and it's really important. There's a lot of focus on it, and I think we're going to be able to fill that gap with all these new IPs we're pulling in.
Very exciting.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for your time today. Congratulations on your very well-earned award from APIC. We're excited to see more from your leadership skills in the future, and we appreciate you coming on and sharing with us.
Thank you for having me. It was great chatting with both of you.
All right, moving into the next segment of today's podcast, Jay and I are really excited to be introducing you all to the new hosts for the APIC 5-Second Rule podcast. They will be formally assuming these duties in January of 2023, but we've got them a little ahead of schedule, so we can introduce them today. I'm going to begin with introducing Lorenza L. Howard. She is an MHA certified infection preventionist with a Lean Six Sigma. Wow, that's a mouthful. Green belt, who is from Chicago. So infection preventionist with Advocate Christ Medical Center. And Jay, you're introducing.
Yes, I am introducing Kelly Holmes. She has a master's in science and is certified in infection control. She is from Baldwin, Missouri, which is near St. Louis, I'm told, and is an infection preventionist with Infection Prevention and Management Associates Incorporated.
Woohoo!
So this welcome, is where you two.
Have the air horn go like, bow,
yes.
Bow, bow. Yay!
The applause, crowd goes crazy.
Say thank hello. You for the introduction. Hello. Yes, that was fantastic. Thank you. So excited to be here.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you, everyone. I am so excited about this opportunity, and I'm looking forward to the journey ahead.
Wonderful, Lorenza. Thank you. It's so good to hear both of your voices. We are thrilled to have you as podcast host starting next year. Real quick, Kelly, I know the question to ask for anyone in or near St. Louis is, are you actually from St. Louis? And if so, what high school did you go to?
I'm not from St. Louis. And so I get to sidestep that question all the time, which is lovely. Yes. And you're right. You're right. That is the question.
So one of the things that we wanted to just take the time to do today is not just introduce you all, but obviously ask you the questions that we ask every infection preventionist. And so, as we did with our guest today, I'll go first. What is something you've learned about yourself as an infection preventionist that you didn't know 3 years ago? And we'll start with Lorenza.
Yes. So actually, 3 years ago, I had yet to attain a role in infection prevention. I was a medical technologist working in the lab at the time, but I will say that I have swiftly learned IP practices and guidelines within the 2 years of me being an infection preventionist. There was no better time to start my career as an IP other than during the global pandemic, which required us newer IPs to quickly attain knowledge within our field while also remaining abreast of ever-changing COVID-19 guidelines.
Yeah, what a way to get your feet wet, if you will. You're already certified. That's awesome, Lorenza.
That's incredible.
We're glad to have you in the profession.
Thank you.
So, Kelly, how about yourself? What is something you've learned about yourself as infection preventionist you didn't know 3 years ago?
So, you know, I'm always a fan of not wasting a good crisis, I guess. And we definitely went through one with COVID and then also health restrictions. But I think what I've learned is it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to say, I don't know either, and sit down with your team at the table and figure out what resources you do have to and the best way to move forward. And in doing so, I hope that I'm able to show my peers that did come into infection prevention during 2020 that you might have done this for a decade or almost two, but there is going to come a day when you don't know the answer, and that's okay. And that's when we lean on each other and figure out the best way forward.
Absolutely. I love it. I think that is the best to say, you know, it's okay to say that you don't know. Just always go search for that answer afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Or do your risk assessment. Yep.
Well, I've got the next question. And Kelly, we're going to start with you. What are you looking forward to for the future of infection prevention?
Well, echoing what our guest earlier said, Kelly, I am very excited because what we're seeing, I think, coming into infection prevention, yes, we've had a lot of attrition, which is compounding the fact that a lot of people are also retiring from the field. But as we bring in new infection preventionists, they're starting their career as a new infection preventionist. You know, they're coming into the field in their early 20s, and that means they have 30 plus years ahead of them that they can build and grow and contribute to the field. So I'm really excited. I think we're on a cusp of a huge change. I don't know exactly what that change is going to be. But I do know that these new infection preventionists, if we support them, as Kelly suggested, and get them excited about the field, I think that we're going to see some really great things down the road.
See, support. It's on my live, laugh, love. It's going to be up there in my apartment. Put it up there. And Lorenza, the same question to you. What are you excited for the future?
Absolutely. I am most excited about two things. I will say is increasing the exposure of infection prevention as a field. I'm pretty sure many other IPs have always been asked, exactly what is it that you do? And this question doesn't come from just, you know, individuals that are not within the healthcare realm. These are healthcare professionals that I work alongside that do not understand exactly what infection preventionist does. And in addition to that, I will say that the educational offerings within infection prevention, I'm most excited about that because I think that that would also bolster the cause of increasing the awareness of infection prevention as a career path.
Yeah, definitely as a profession. Yeah, seeing the university programs that are being formulated across the country is exciting, definitely.
Absolutely. Do you think anybody can fit what we do in an elevator pitch?
Oh my God.
I've tried. I don't think so.
Yeah. How tall is the tower that the elevator is going up?
Right.
The quickest thing that I say is that when someone asks, especially those that are not within healthcare, is, you know, think of the most infectious people within your community. How best do you contain those people to ensure that they are not infecting others? So
that's our job.
There it is.
In a
nutshell. That's right.
So I say I make sure that the bugs you bring in stay with you and you don't get any new ones along the way.
That's my job.
That's digestible. That's a good elevator pitch, Marie.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good one.
Sometimes I get this confused look when I'm like, I'm the octopus of the hospital. And they're like, what?
Everything is infection control.
True. Yeah. They're like, absolutely. Ursula? Like,
and your bugs stay with you. Okay.
it's been a pleasure getting to be here as guest hosts, but really to have you two identified from a national search and getting you into the podcast today. We're so excited about the future. We hope that it is just as much fun and joyful for the two of you as it is. I won't speak for Jay, but as it's been for me. Jay, do you have any parting thoughts?
Yeah, no, I've had a really, really wonderful time on this podcast, co-hosting with you, Marie, for the past few months. Kelly, Lorenza, I'm really looking forward to the insight and energy that you two are going to bring to this podcast going into the new year. I think it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful time.
Yeah.
Thank you. We have big shoes to fill. You all have done a wonderful absolutely. Job, and it's been a pleasure listening to you along the way. So thank you.
Thanks so much.
Cool.
Marie,
we've got listeners, Jay.
All right.
You're famous. Yep.
So with that being said, if you are listening, our listeners outside of Kelly and Lorenza, and you want to know more about today's discussion, resources are available on the webpage for this episode. Visit www.5secondruleshow.org, and that's with the number 5. We want to hear from you, so now you can join the conversation by submitting a voicemail to the 5 Second Rule podcast team. Click on the Contribute to the Convo button on the top right corner of the website and record your message. Share a success story, what you're grateful for, or what you'd like to hear about on the show. You might hear yourself on a future episode. You can also reach us by email at the 5secondrule@apic.org email. Again, that's with the number 5. You can rate or review us wherever you listen to this podcast. And we are so appreciative of the hard work each and every infection preventionist and team is doing to make the world a safer place through infection prevention. And remember, IP stands for important person. And you are all awesome. And I thank you for listening because this has been an incredible few months. Stay safe, be amazing, and we'll see you next time.